no slobber king.
I can hear y'all good.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, May 5th, 2020, and the time is 2 o'clock. We're calling to order the Montgomery County Hospital District and the Montgomery County Public Health District special meeting. Thank you for everybody who's on board. We'll go around the table quickly and just give an update. And I'll start since they claim I steal all their thunder, so I'll continue to try to do that. We've been talking about what's going to be happening in our crystal ball with COVID-19 and how that's going to affect operations here. And so we're, Chief Campbell and the crew here, they're going to stand up the command post and they're going to go follow behind the governor's orders about 2 or 3 weeks to see what the outcome and fallout, if any, of any relaxing our standards will be. So we'll be watching very closely for the next couple of weeks at least to see if we're going to have any kind of spike in Montgomery County's statistics, and if we do, how does that affect both the public health department and the hospital district. Our calls have changed a lot. We have dropped our run rate about 20%, but it appears that the patients that we're getting are sicker because people are apparently afraid to go to the hospital. The hospitals are complaining. They've been low. They've been reporting a low census at first on purpose, especially since elective procedures were not allowed in the hospital. But they're still running a low census, and they're starting to call up and say, hey, where are the patients? And we keep saying they're staying at home. Chief Campbell has been talking to some of the representatives of the hospitals in the area, and he's talked with CETRAC about sending out a public message to the community saying our hospitals aren't pictured like the ones in New York. There aren't gurneys in the hallways with sick people lying everywhere. The hospitals are open, the hospitals are clean, and they're ready to take care of it if you need to be taken care of. Don't wait too long if you've got a critical issue. Call 911 and go to the hospital. So he talked to CETRAC. CETRAC's a big organization, so we're considering potentially working with the hospitals in this area and with MISTI, our PIO, and put out some public service announcements with the hospital district and all the hospitals saying, we're here to take care of you if you need to be taken care of. Don't be afraid to get the care you need. These hospitals are capable of taking care of you without further endangering your health. So if you have any comments or thoughts on that, please give us a note or a call online. We've changed the way that we've been taking care of patients in the county, and Doc has spoken about that and probably will say some other things about that today. But we've been very safe because we've been putting on the appropriate protective equipment, and we're putting on excessive protective equipment on anything that we guess may be a problem. And now we're gone to beyond guessing what's a problem. And as a result, even though we're doing between 140 and 180 calls a day, our medics are staying very safe. So we feel very comfortable that if you're properly doffing and donning PPE, you're in very good shape. Also, the doctors have done an excellent job of having our medics assess sicker patients and doing fewer procedures on them to make sure that they don't aerosolize the back of the ambulance or the house and harm themselves, particularly other people who may be family members. And so that process will probably continue. So because of that, we have stood up two squads, and the squads are really working, taking care of patients who may be COVID patients who really don't know if they want to go to the hospital or not, or patients who are difficult refusal. The squads have been very helpful in that regard. It saves our ambulances for actually taking care of sicker patients who probably do need to go to the hospital. The future of the squad is something that we're working on, and exactly how their job roles are going to continue, if they do continue beyond the current crisis, is something that the chief and his team are working on. We'll talk more about that later. We've had numerous calls to our call center throughout this whole time. Our calls got as high as almost 200 calls a day. They've fallen off from they're running about 125 calls a day the last couple of weeks. Now they're down to about 70 calls per day. But we think that the calls should increase when we begin our testing voucher program. And we've got our contracts in place. We sent them to America's ER and Lone Star Family Clinic. They've got the contracts today, and they should get them back. And Melissa, we got three more organizations that potentially we've been doing work with us. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yes, we have Lone Star signed contract. Thank you, Heidi. And Ian. TCP The Life, who has clinics in Magnolia and Splendora, told me that they will have the signed contract by the end of day today. And America's ER has told us the same. I also got on the way in here a call from Kingwood Emergency Center, which is not Kingwood Hospital. It's an emergency hospital across the street that is freestanding with injuries. So I'll be calling her back after this meeting, which we've given 5 locations around the county to do testing. After this meeting, I have a call with John Henners to work out the final stages of the upfront laser dish program, and we're going to begin testing that with HCAP patients to sign them up for testing as we ensure everything is working before we roll it out to the public, hopefully Thursday or Friday. We still need to meet with these centers and know what their process looks like so that we're getting these citizens the correct information.
The military was in here last Monday. They had a stand-up center for one day. They did 190 tests, and I think the tests were such that they're planning on coming back May 10th. Also, Kroger is planning on standing up centers in 2 places, perhaps for a couple of days, and Walmart is planning on standing up centers in 3 places, probably for 3 warnings in each location. We don't know the times and dates of those testing centers yet. Also, while I'm still talking, one of the things that we are working on, I'm working on 2 things. Number one, I'm completing the request for proposal for the legal process for public health and the hospital district. We put out an RFP in late February. COVID got us sidetracked. I'm now working finalizing the information we received. We received information from 6 law firms, so I'll be getting that information to you. And then finally, we've really begun working and processing on our budget process for next year. We're planning next year to squeeze our budget to the point that we still can function well, but something will put us in a good holding pattern because we're really concerned about the 2022 budget. And we're thinking that, the 2023 fiscal budget. Next year, calendar year 2021, we think it's going to be a year that hopefully will show us where we're going with the economy, how long it may be in a dip, and hopefully when the pickup will be. So with that, I'll turn the report over to Chief Campbell.
Thank you, sir. A little update on the EMS side. Mr. Johnson mentioned we're really closely monitoring EMS call volume and hospital capacity. One of the main things that helps us track and trend what's going on is the county started opening up phase 1 on Friday the 1st. We're going to lag behind the county 7 to 10 days and monitor EMS volume, what kind of calls we're going to, monitor hospital volume, and see how the county is responding. So just kind of as we predicted, when more people get out on the roadway, we start seeing more blunt force trauma from NBCs. We start to see some trauma related to swimming, things like that, that we didn't see when everybody was staying home. So we're really trying to keep up with that data. We've got a group of EOS that are almost done with their field training. They'll be released soon, but it's a little bit of a different process for them as we try to manage third riders in the field safely, but they've done really well. They've been with new captains, and everyone has done well thus far. The doc has, Mr. Johnson mentioned the squads. We do have two in service, one on the east side and one on the west side of the county, using 45 as the split. They really do a good job of being responding to low-level calls. So they get the option to work with alarm on going to low-level responses. If they are close to a priority one or a high-level responsible, they can make a difference as a paramedic. They go and add an ambulance, but their primary function is to make contact with priority three or lower-level responses and see what the patient's needs are, whether it's COVID-related or someone who's a frequent user of 911 who just needs some support and some alternative resources. We've been able to do some treatments on scene, consult with the doctor, and avoid a potential ER visit if needed. But what's been the best component of that is at the end of the week on Friday, as we call back the previous patients, we continue to do that. We continue to get good feedback from the patients and their families on their interactions. That's been good.
It's interesting, too, to note that on the average, we're averaging about four calls, runs per day per unit. There's quite a bit of variability in those 30 units. But the two squads are running about between 12 and 14 calls a day. So we are having lots of calls where they're making lots of touches in the community.
There's been a state initiative through HHSC on testing high-risk environments, nursing homes, for example. So through CETRAC and EMTF, Ms. Miller can expand a little bit more with the community paramedics and EMS combined, doing some regional deployments to test some of these high-risk nursing homes that have been identified by the state. We've reached out to every nursing home in the county and asked if they wanted to participate in testing. Some have said yes, some have said no. And then now that HHSC has come back and said, if you meet these requirements, we're likely going to insist that you get tested, thank you. Then we're starting to get some callbacks. So we've got teams of 3 to 5, depending on the size of the facility. We've been able to work with those facilities and get residents and staff tested, depending on the different scenarios. And then this week on Wednesday, one of our district chiefs will be deployed with that Texas military team that's going around the region and setting up the one-day testing site. So one of our chiefs will operate in the midst position of EMTF 6 through set track, a lot of acronyms, for 7 days. That's all the updates I have.
So a little bit, I think there were some questions, and I'd go right into the questions about, like, how the medical examiner or how the forensics treats COVID and non-COVID deaths. I could just kind of go through a little bit of the process and take any questions. You know, when you die in the county, that's really up to that individual justice of the peace in that precinct to determine whether or not you need to have a coroner's inquest or have a medical examination. If that JP determines that it's an unexplained death or a suspicious death or each one of the state criteria, which is a traumatic death, things like that, or people that die in the emergency department, like in hospitals, things like that, then it goes to forensics, and that case is investigated for the cause and the manner of death. And what that process is not just simply an autopsy. It's actually the doctors there, the staff there, go through an extensive medical record review. They look at our medical records that our crews create. If we've made contact with the patient, they get the hospital records, and they put that together with the physical examination of the patient and the toxicology, whatever testing they need to come up with a cause of manner of death. So that's kind of the process. I can't give you an exact number, but I would say probably less than 5% of all the deaths that we deal with, it's a very low number, actually get referred to the forensics. So if people want to know, how many deaths in the county are COVID-related, the honest answer is probably no one knows. If you're 91 years old and you die in your sleep, you're probably not going to get an autopsy and your death investigated. I think, probably the most common scenario out there. So that's kind of a little bit about that process. I'll echo some of the other things that have come on. I think the testing is ramped up. I'm really glad to see that. I think the community paramedics have done a phenomenal job working with Sean Simmons, and it's really kind of been our lead and our liaison with RAC to really dial in these long-term care facility testing, which I think is incredibly important in our public health effort to identify where our at-risk people are. So what do we do with that information? We try to identify these at-risk places so we can segregate the sick patients from the non-sick, whether that be in a different wing or maybe if it's a multi-nat or a national chain of long-term care facilities to a different facility so we can isolate this patient. So that's, I think that's done incredibly well. The region has reached out to NCHD for training videos and our expertise for our community paramedics. We liaise with other departments to help train their community paramedics in our process. So I'm very, very proud of our team for that effort. Clearly, Dr. Patrick, what are we doing with education to get back to the new normal? We're trying to continue on educating. We'll be in the midst of this as we get back to our regular educational offerings that we have for our staff to keep everybody up to date, not only on COVID, but on non-COVID. We do a Wednesday night. He does a Wednesday night lecture series. It's a short 15-minute, and then he usually has a good question and answer afterwards. So it gives us time with all the crews and a time to kind of get away from the day-to-day operational things and talk about something kind of interesting and clinical. Overall, I'm still very, very pleased. Like, the staff's doing very well. I would like to give a shout-out to our chief people person, Emily Fitzgerald. Really did a special thing for the command staff. This, you can see on this Zoom meeting, this room is pretty isolating, I think, and we have just a small command staff that comes here for a good part of every day for the past 9 weeks, and our chief people person kind of sought that out and really did a nice little get-together last week where we just took an hour and kind of had some fellowship and some food and really decompressed. So, Emily, thank you very much for that. I will definitely commend you on that. Well done.
I just echo some of the things Dr. Dixon just said as far as spreading, you know, our community paramedics and testing protocols with the rest of the area. We've done a bit of the same with our PPE protocols as well. We've had several local agencies contact us and ask us about our reusable gown where you source those and how we wash those and how we reuse those. And I think for a lot of folks, they've had trouble getting, reusable, paper gowns. And we were really, really quick and early in the game with getting the cloth gowns to be able to, source enough of those and figure out the rotation and the washing protocol. And we've gotten really excellent feedback from a lot of local and even national services asking us about how we're doing that and how we, cost and kind of nuts and bolts details. So it's been encouraging from my perspective to be able to share that. We shared that through the podcast. Through some other outlets, and we've had really excellent feedback. So, that's been nice to be able to not only use it for our paramedics, but to be able to share that with others because, it sounds like a simple solution, really wasn't. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that went into that, but I think the excellent part about it is that in the end, it keeps our paramedics safe, it keeps our infection rates down and keep community safer, and we've been able to share that from the district, so that's been really encouraging for us.
And that's where having someone who's worked as a hospital nurse for a long time came in as a real benefit, because Melissa's the one who actually came up with the idea and sourced getting these gowns in here. So if we hadn't had somebody who was smart and thinking and creative and motivated, and maybe somebody knew something about nursing, we might have missed the boat on that. But thank you, Melissa, and thank the paramedics.
There were so many steps. That was the part, you know, seeing it, you know, from my standpoint, as a physician, PPE has never been number one on my radar.
Well,
but watching the entire process from standing in here, whatever it was, 6 weeks ago, trying to figure out which direction to tie, to actually getting them and trying them on and sizing them, to, okay, how many do we need? Well, we need more than just one per truck, and we're going to rotate, and then figure out the rotation, and then figure out, well, how do we, in PPE, get them into the washer and out of the washer?
Where
are
they going
to truck? Yeah, where are they going to truck? And there is a tank.
No one else had a wash PPE.
And how do we get the blood out? We have the blood left. And so there was so many steps along the way. And, you know, from a documentation standpoint, you know, we were able to document each one of those things. And the paramedics were, you know, flexible like they had been with everything as far as a little change here, a little change there. And then tons of feedback coming from them as far as the logistics go. It seems like, oh, you have reasonable gowns. Excellent. But there was so much more that went into it, and we've been able to share those lessons, and everybody's just been, you know, it's been a true team effort. Really, I think something that sort of was a microcosm of how we worked the entire process, really positive.
Yeah, just listening to the podcast, especially early on, watching the doctors change things, get the reason for the change, adjust things because they're getting feedback from the crews in the hospital, doing more research and coordinating and just kicking and tying things to make it work. I think it's been a tremendous experience to watch these guys do real in-time, just-in-time care management for the community. They've done an excellent, outstanding job, and the doctors speaking well. We're keeping people well, and we're getting patients taken care of. Now we just need to let the community know it's okay to go to health care provider.
We're not ignoring our in-person workers either. Last Friday we had a manager's meeting. We did two groups just because of the size and to maintain social distancing, and so we had our work-from-home managers and all managers come in for meetings. We got feedback on how things are working at home and got them thinking about how we're going to go back into the building. And it was a very positive meeting, and we were glad to see their faces, and they were glad to get to go home afterwards.
Everyone tested negative.
We all did the antibody test. So for what it's worth, we were all negative on that, and none of us had immunity. Today's numbers, we have active 448 positives, 56 in the hospital, which is 12.5% of our cases. We've had 15 deaths and 199 recoveries, for a total of, since the beginning, 662 positives in the county. That's it for me.
Okay. A little bit about, you know, we have the majority of our support staff is working from home, and they've done a fantastic job. They've been very productive. I'll have to back away, sorry. My producer's got me in trouble over here. But they've done a fantastic job, and so we told them that while we love them and we miss them, we want to be sure that everything is safe for them and for everyone who's working here before we start coming back to work. So our immediate plan is that we are not going to move anybody back into the building until, at the earliest, beginning in June. That's going to depend on several things. One, you know, where are people working best? How are they most effective? What rate do we need to transition people back in? There may be people who don't have daycare available at this time. Also, our IT and our radio department has to work with people to get their machines from their home back to this location. So we can probably assume at the earliest that we'll have a trickling of people coming back into the office during the month of June, assuming we don't have any big COVID-19 outbreaks. Anybody else have any comments? Any questions? Well, thank you very much for your time. If you do have any